Welcome to K-Word Sports Talk. We're talking sports. Stephen Williams in the studio here with Tim Taylor. And guest host today, Brian Horsberg from Denver.
How you guys doing today?
Doing pretty well. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing well. Jeff's not in the studio today. He is somewhere. Do you know where he is, David?
I don't know. He's at ZBT Formal. Jeff Lesser, esteemed ZBT. I think he's the president there. He's having a good time. I'm going to guess Chicago. I really don't know, though. He's going to call in. Jeff Lesser calling in.
Excellent.
From mystery location.
But, it's kind of a little bit of a role reversal. I mean, I'm usually the one calling in, but
yeah,
he's going to do it today.
Today he's calling in. So how's everybody doing? Now, we had the NCAA tournament, Division I tournament. It came to sort of an anticlimactic finish. We had a couple upsets. We had the Cleveland State upset over Wake Forest. That was huge for Brian and I. And that was huge. And Arizona made it to the Sweet 16. But other than that, you know, not as many upsets as we were expecting. We get to the Final Four with Michigan State, 2 seed, you know, North Carolina, Villanova, and UConn. And we get to the championship game, North Carolina, the great North Carolina team, favored against Michigan State. And it wasn't close for really any part of the game.
It was close at the tip-off. It was 0-0 and then nothing.
Yeah, Michigan State went up 3-2, and it was a blowout.
I mean, I was a little late turning it on, and they were down already down 20 in the first half. And I was like, usually when a team's down 20, they'll make a run. They'll make a run and get close, but it just never happened for them.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of got spoiled over the last couple of years because we did have some close championship games, but it kind of reminds me of the older ones back in the early 2000s when the championship game would be a blowout. And, I mean, you guys are right. I mean, North Carolina went up double digits early in the first half and never relinquished that lead. So, I don't know. Pretty disappointing. Everyone. I don't think anyone really expected Michigan State to really win. I think everyone would have been shocked if it happened, and North Carolina proved that they were the best team, just like everyone thought at the beginning of the season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the Carolina game they played earlier in the year, one of the beginning out-of-conference games in the year, and they won by over 30 points. So we knew that they were going to be heavily favored. But, you know, you look at a Michigan State team where throughout this tournament, I've been picking against them ever since the second round of the tournament. I picked USC against them. You know, I picked Kansas against them. I picked Louisville against them, and they won. And once they got to this point, I really wasn't sure because they had this team, and they beat UConn also. I picked UConn. They had this mentality, this defensive mentality. They were very efficient. It was one of those teams that you wouldn't expect them to get blown out. But then they started missing shots. They turned the ball over 11 times in the first 12 minutes of the game. You're not going to win, ever. It doesn't matter how good you are, how efficient you are. If one of the keys to your game is just severely lacking, it's going to be a long night for you. So they showed that in the game. It was really the worst championship game I've seen in a long time. And I watched it over with a friend from Chapel Hill who was a pretty big Carolina fan. But throughout the game, we were talking about other stuff. We were talking about, I don't know, other sports or entertainment, anything, music, anything that was not the game.
There's nothing to talk about. I mean, North Carolina was not doing anything that was flashy. They weren't doing anything special. There wasn't any fun plays. It was just, I mean, they played a good basketball game. They played sound basketball. But, I mean, besides looking at Tyler Hansbrough's big bug eyes, I didn't have much to do during the game. And when he was on the bench, I had no interest in watching.
Yeah, and it was great to see Tyler Hansbrough's career end, and most likely Ty Lawson will most likely go to the NBA.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What are the NBA prospects for some of these North Carolina players?
Well, Hansbrough's been here. I kind of feel bad for him because his stock has pretty much not changed ever since he got there. He probably would have had the highest stock as a freshman. Freshman, he comes in, he's a first-team All-American. He could have gotten drafted as a late lottery, maybe, around 13 or 14 pick. You know, now his sophomore year, about the same. Then junior year, you notice that he didn't really grow much. His game is suited for the college level, but against more athletic people, he'd have some problems. So started to drop to around 18 to 20. And then this year, you know, he'll probably be a 25 to – he'll be a late first round, possibly in the second round. So I do kind of feel bad that college works that way. So he's not really the top prospect. Guy like Wayne Ellington – shooting guard. He could have, he would have been a lottery pick if he left a little bit earlier. I believe he's a junior now. He'll probably be picked around 17 or so.
But you think Ty Lawson is the man?
For this group, yeah, I guess. I think he should be a lottery pick or late lottery pick, just because he's comparable guy to Mo Williams. You know, it's a key acquisition for the Cavs. He's really been the catalyst to this incredible record breaking season for the Cavs.
Indeed. And then what kind of team do you think Ty Lawson could bring that to?
I don't know. I mean, any team that wants to win, that wants to get in the playoffs. I mean, you look at his attributes as a point guard. He's super fast. He can create his own shots. He can shoot. It's not something that, you know, that's not his MO, but he can shoot, and you know, he makes good decisions.
Whatever happened to that toe injury that he was supposed to have throughout this tournament? It didn't seem to slow him down at all.
Yeah, this is affecting people's people were freaking out over their brackets. They're like, oh, I wonder if Ty Lawson's toe is going to be okay, because if his toe is not okay, then they're going to lose. And I think he just said he toughed through it. He said he was going to be hurt, but it's the tournament time, and you just kind of suck it up.
And you talk about Tyler Hansbrough, how if he had come out maybe last year, how he might have been a lottery pick, but seems like he made the right decision. I mean, he's going to go down as one of the best players in UNC history, ACC history, and maybe even college basketball history by coming back and winning another championship. So I don't know what you think, but I think it was definitely a good decision for him to come back.
I agree. I mean, I love seeing players come back, and like people like Greg Oden. I mean, it was fun to watch him for a year in college, but I wanted to see more of him. And you saw the highlight of him last night when he totally missed his dunk. Maybe he should have practiced that a little more in college. You know, it's just interesting to see these kids go straight 1 year in college now because of the new NBA rules, straight to the NBA. And a lot of times it doesn't seem like they're ready.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And we talk a lot about Lawson and Hansbrough, and neither one of those guys was actually the MVP of the Final Four.
Yeah, Wayne Ellington, MVP of the Final Four. And I think he'll be a first-round draft pick. People were kind of comparing him to a Ray Allen type when he first got to North Carolina, because he's got a pretty long range. He can hit the three pretty consistently. You saw that throughout the tournament. He was scoring about 19 points a game throughout the tournament. And this guy, he'll be a solid player. He might start for some NBA team right off the bat. I mean, we'll see what type of situation he gets put in. He's probably more like a guy like Luther Head, played for Houston Rockets for the Illinois Fighting Illini. He's probably more like that because he's only about 6'3 or 6'4. It's funny, the best prospect they had on the team was Ed Davis, his backup power forward. This guy who he could have left and been drafted above all these guys. This guy was probably scored about 7 points a game. You look at Marvin Williams, the year that he came out, he was a sixth man. He had all these celebrated players, Raymond Felton, Sean May, and this sixth man gets drafted above all of them. And that's what I kind of don't like about the NBA scouts, but they do what they have to do. This UNC team, it was almost destiny. There was your theory that you brought up about a month ago, that the top 15 teams that stayed in the top 15 of the AP poll throughout the year, they, you know, if you look at the champions since like 2004, they always win. There's never a team that just gets hot. Since Carmelo Anthony, there's never been a team that just gets hot and just wins. You know, the consistent teams that are good throughout the year win the championship.
I mean, you can get hot even so, but you got to be hot pretty early on, you know, from the middle of the season. You've got to stay hot until the tournament. It's not something where you can be outside the top 25 and all of a sudden jump in and be a Final Four team right away like that. It just doesn't work like that. And it's pretty much the mark of consistency. And UNC, I mean, people kind of jumped off the bandwagon when they saw that he wasn't that UNC wasn't going to be undefeated. But, you know, after that, UNC pretty much took it to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to Wake Forest, and I think they lost to Maryland.
They lost to Maryland, yeah.
Yeah, and aside from that, these are teams – Maryland's not as talented. But Wake Forest is a team that's got, like, three first-round NBA guys on their team. So, you know, in an individual game, this is something that can happen. But Wake Forest also lost to the Cleveland State Vikings.
They did. I mean, Wake Forest just didn't have the experience straight up. They played some good basketball at the beginning of the season. they beat some very good teams, as we saw. But when it came down to it, it shows, I mean, that was a pure example of showing that experience does matter in college basketball. I mean, Cleveland State, lots of seniors. Wake Forest, no seniors?
No, I don't think any significant
not
seniors.
Not one significant senior. But, I mean, that's just, it shows you, and that's kind of the college basketball season. That's how it goes along. So it's just, experience really matters at the end.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about something real quick, just segue to Cleveland State. Getting a little off topic, but this is something I want to bring up. Now, remember Antonio Gates. You remember how he made it, and he had a very unique experience making it to the NFL. The guy who played basketball for Kent State, Mac School in Ohio, and Northeast Ohio, I guess you could say.
Indeed.
And he hadn't played football since, I believe, high school. He tried out for a few teams, and you know, he made the San Diego Chargers, and then, he became an All-Pro. Now, Jonathan Bullock, one of the star, he's a power forward for the Cleveland State Vikings.
He was.
He's trying out for about 10 teams on April, actually today.
I wish we had a reporter on scene there. Yeah. If you watch this guy play, he's got the dreads. He's got the basketball player, the football player build going on. He doesn't look like he should be on the basketball floor.
Oh, he's a huge, muscular guy. And, yeah, that's the first thing I saw when I saw him. I'm like, wow, this guy could be a pretty good football player. So I think he's trying out as a tight end, and maybe he could possibly play like a linebacker or possibly an undersized defensive end in the pros. And
do you think he has a chance?
Yeah, I think he does, just – the way that basketball players have just incredible hand-eye coordination, and you know, he's obviously got the physical tools. He's played in high school. They said he played like every position, every skill position in high school.
And he's a good kid too. And when I worked for Cleveland State a couple years ago, I did get to spend a little time with him. He's one of those people who's a hard worker, puts his head down, and gets the job done. So I think if he puts his mind to it, that he can really, really maybe make it to the next level in football.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens when you get stuck in the studio with two Ohio heads. They start talking about topics like that. Getting back to the
you
UNC.
You know you love it, Tim.
Yeah, whatever. Getting back to the UNC-MSU, amazing stat. Michigan State only allowed 80 points twice in the season on defense, and both of those times were to UNC. Let's do a public service announcement really quick. This will be read by our guest host, Brian from University of Denver. Take it away, Brian.
Every day, we count on things like the traffic light, the mailbox, and the elevator. But did you know all of these things came from the minds of African Americans? Support minority education today so we don't miss out on the next big idea tomorrow. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. To support the United Negro College Fund, please visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by the UNCF and the Ed Council.
Thank you, Brian. Well read. Well, that music kind of reminded me of the Masters music a little bit, so why don't we transition right into that? The Masters is on. For some people, this signifies the beginning of spring. For others, this signifies golf, I guess. And for me, it signifies a little bit of both. The Masters is just crazy how people really get into it. I think each sport kind of has that one event where people really kind of jump in and get real interested. And I think for golf, the Masters is it. I mean, people from all over the place that never watch golf will watch it this weekend.
What is it that does it for you? Why do you like the Masters so much?
I like it because just of the picture that everyone paints of it. I listen to all the guys on ESPN, and they talk about how it's like walking into another world, and how it seems like it's much more than golf. And I mean, I'm not a big golf fan. I don't play golf, but it's just interesting to see how excited everyone gets about it. But yeah, that's just what the Masters is for me.
I totally agree with you. And you go, there's so many great traditions. You got the green jacket. You got all these great things that only happen in Augusta, Georgia. And my brother got to attend last year, and he just said it's just one of those things. Like you said, when you walk in, you're there. It is golf. So this year, who do you guys like?
This year, well, you almost can't. I don't even know, because you can't pick against Tiger Woods.
Yeah, so you have to bring up Tiger, right?
You can't pick against Tiger Woods. Now, right now, there's a guy named Chad Campbell who, through two rounds, almost two full rounds, is minus 11, which is incredible. Now, the weather isn't that great right now. It's very windy. So what he's doing so far has been phenomenal. I don't know if he can keep that up, but he's about five, six strokes ahead of Tiger right now. I can't pick against him. I would find it hard to pick against him. It's like Tiger or the field. Even if I didn't say specifically who else I was looking at, I would still pick Tiger.
And especially in this time where he's coming back from injury, this is his first major tournament. It's really everyone's eyes on him. So who's going to beat Tiger? Is Tiger going to win or is someone else going to win? And I think he's going to win. Like we were just watching highlights this morning before we came into the studio here, and he had a little rough start. He's been missing some greens, not putting the ball where he's wanted it. But, you know, he'll get that out of his system, and, you know, come Sunday, that's what he lives for.
And at the worst, you know, he's shooting par. Like, he's missing these putts, and then he's tapping in for par. So I'm not really he's still on. He's just a little – he's off with his putting.
Yeah. And apparently the course is really difficult this year. Apparently a lot of the pros have been talking about that. But right now Tiger is 7 strokes back behind Campbell, who's in the lead -9. And he's through 16 holes. So I'm going to have to go ahead and pick Campbell. I think he's been impressive through 2 days. I know the last 2 days are the harder of the two. Even though you're more used to the course, that's when the pressure starts to mount. But I've been really impressed by the fact that he's pretty much duplicated yesterday's performance by getting another -5, -4 kind of day in there. And I think he'll be able to go ahead and string it out and finish it through.
But yeah, I like the – I'm just going to speak more broad perspective about the Masters. I really like just – the atmosphere that it brings, that everyone Sunday, everyone's going to be sitting there watching, just waiting for Tiger. He'll be lurking. He probably won't be ahead.
Probably about 2 or 3 strokes down with about 9 holes to go.
He'll be lurking. He'll probably be in the final group or like this, you know, one of the 2 final groups, and he'll always just be lurking. I love that killer instinct.
He is a tiger.
And you know, Brian and I are going out at least once, so hopefully the weather cooperates with us. But yeah, you know, this will be pretty much my first going out of the season. A golf of the season, and I think a lot of other people, if the weather cooperates, they'll be out there.
I mean, you think about the Masters, you think, hey, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's why everybody likes to watch. It really, it's such a human sport. You get to see all the guys out there really enjoying, you know, hitting the balls and around and stuff like that. Clearly, I don't partake in any of that, but if David commits to teaching me, then we'll see what happens.
We've hit him on the driving range a couple times over the summer.
But never, not a course yet. I guess I'm not ready for that at this point.
Yeah, the one thing I really like about golf is these guys are average human beings. They're not, I mean, there's a couple tall guys out there.
And Tiger Woods
can bench press like 400 pounds.
He's a little different, but
yeah, well,
for
the most part, I mean, I see myself, and I'm never going to be a great golfer by any means, but I'm thinking, hey, if I actually put my mind to it, I could be pretty good. But at the same time, like, I could never go join the NBA. If it's close, I mean, I'm 5'7" on a good day.
Yeah.
So it's just that the availability about golf is just it's good for the public because they know that they can do it.
Agreed.
Now, throughout this season, it'll be interesting to see who emerges as the next sort of competitor to Tiger, because Phil Mickelson, I mean, he's still. He still does well, but he's becoming increasingly – he's not the clear number two to me. It
nope.
Seems like there are other – you know, Adam Scott's a young guy who's been – you know, this guy for past, like, 4 years been that guy, that young up-and-coming challenger to Tiger, but he's never quite got there. Vijay Singh, it seems like he's not quite – at the form that he was when he was like the number two to Tiger. Do you see any emerging guys? I mean, you know, we're not huge golf fans, but we do follow the sport. Is there somebody that's just, you know, Jim Furyk's getting older, so he's not really going to be there? You know, who's the next challenger?
I would argue that it's Harrington, Padraig Harrington.
Oh, yeah.
He's won the last 3 majors, and I think that kind of automatically makes you that next competitor.
And he's
right
so
now.
Quiet and unassuming that
yep.
you don't really.
Yeah, and he's pretty much amazing. He's won the last 3 majors, as I said, and right now he's tied with Tiger at -2, but he's only played 1 hole today. So for all of you who don't know, golf is played in 4 rounds. So we get a round Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Each round is 18 holes, so that makes for a total of 72 holes that you have to play in a tournament. Is it repetitive? Yeah, but I mean, each time you hit a different hole, it's a little bit different.
They move the tee boxes around, move the holes around, and it really can change the whole round. But going back to what Dave was talking about being that one other competitor, who's going to be the number two, and we were struggling with that, who's going to be. But I think that's a testament to who Tiger Woods is, because every time someone seems like they're coming up to maybe be that next number one or number two, He fights him off. Like, I remember back when Sergio Garcia, he was making a big splash.
Yeah.
But Tiger Woods, I mean, played with him, but he was always better. He was always just that one step better. And it's a testament to what Tiger Woods does, as he always just, I mean, he's always just one step ahead. He's always tries a little harder, just makes that putt, and he just has the edge on everyone else out there.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't see a clear-cut challenger to Tiger. You saw that he's already won a tournament since he's been back. So, and he's been very competitive in the past year. You know, you look at the year where he got hurt. That year, he still won like 4 out of 6 tournaments.
And he was hurt.
And he was hurt. And that U.S. Open was one of the most valiant efforts I've ever seen. You know, it's basically playing with a torn ACL.
Yeah.
It reminds me of football last year. Philip Rivers for the Chargers. He was playing the New England Patriots, and we find out that, you know, this whole game he's playing with a torn ACL. He has like no ACL there.
I mean, all about being a gamer. It's all about being a gamer, because I mean, if you care about your team and you're determined, I mean, we've seen players just do amazing things.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of how you can pick out the real champions.
Yeah. Apparently, Tiger Woods pretty crazy when it comes to just having an intense focus. Heard a story from Rick Riley, actually, where he was standing with Tiger Woods' mother and, like, one of Tiger's good friends. And it was, like, right before a tournament, and they all said hi to him, and he walked right by him, didn't even see him. And it's just like, you know?
Oh, man.
When Tiger's on, I mean, in any intense competitor, but especially Tiger, I mean, when he's on, you know, it's just nothing's going to throw him off. You know, he's going to be, and that's why we're all so confident that he's going to be close to the leader on that last day, because, I mean, it just really seems like the hotter the pressure gets, or the higher the pressure gets, the more focused he gets, and the better he's going to perform.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a pretty good recap of golf in general, the Masters in general. This is always just the best time for that. Just throughout this whole semester, we've been really, really fortunate with just how sports works out. You have the Super Bowl that goes in, you know, that goes around the beginning of February. Or you have the bowl season first, the beginning of January. That's great. I got to see Ohio State lose again in a big-time atmosphere. That was fun. And then the Super Bowl, the beginning of February. Then you have, you know, basketball going on, the All-Star game in the middle of February. Then you get to March. You have March Madness with college basketball that goes on. That ends. We're approaching the NBA playoffs in, you know, a week or two. And, you know, the Masters around this time. For me, this is the best. I mean, the best time. This couple stretch.
This is actually a really interesting debate to me. You know, what is the best sports month? Would you say April is the best with baseball, with basketball rounding up, with the Masters? I mean, just the end of college basketball. It seems like a lot of stuff happens in April. Would you say that April is the best month for sports?
Yeah, just with everything going on, because people love baseball. The really cool thing about baseball. I know I'm not a huge baseball fan, but is when you begin the season, at least for the first couple of weeks,
everybody has a chance to win. Everyone believes they can be the team.
Except for the 2009 Cleveland Indians.
Hey, hey,
won't get into that. It looks like they're already out getting swept by Texas.
The beautiful thing is we can still be 159-3.
Yeah. And I saw that this is like his Facebook status, or Samir's too, I think.
It's just kind of an ongoing thing, because we think we have a chance every year. And, I mean, so do the Kansas City Royals think they have a chance every year. I mean,
sure do.
You know what? The Indians are in their division, so they probably have a chance.
It is a little – now, granted, it is a little different from NFL to a lesser degree.
But it's that first month in the NFL. I mean, if you lose 2 or 3 games, you're probably done.
But I mean, it's a little different that the NFL, as soon as the season's over, the next season everyone has hope.
Right.
Now, in baseball, you don't really have that hope, but like you get reinvigorated once the season starts for a couple weeks. So you have that, and then it's really the end of the tournament. You know, the best teams are playing in college basketball, and you get to the part in the NBA where people are really trying every game because they're trying to position themselves.
You have home court advantage on the line. I mean, it's a really exciting time in all sports. There's nothing that's not going on. And the football draft is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about that later on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's so much going on in college sports, in all sports.
Yeah.
And it's just a time you love to be a sports fan.
All right. Well, you're listening to 90.3 FM, K-Wer radio station. This is K-Wer Sports Talk. We're talking sports. This is David Williams. Stepping in for Jeff Lesser, who is away for the time. Tim Taylor, my guest host, Brian Horsberg, everyone in the studio. Jeff is going to be calling us relatively soon. He's got a little something to talk about with the NFL. He's a huge NFL guy. Now, he wants to talk a little bit about the draft, and there are a couple stories that we can mention there, and also the schedule release for all the NFL teams. The Browns, we had one of the hardest schedules last year. We're going to have one of the easiest ones this year.
Thank goodness. No more Monday night games, right?
No more Monday night games.
Yes. We'll have to play a good season, and then they'll schedule us some, and then we'll fall apart again. So it's going to be great. It's kind of the ongoing trend with Cleveland sports.
Yeah. Really. So Jeff is going to call in, but if you'd like to call in and share some of your opinions with us, feel free. Our number is 314-935-5987. That's 314-935-KWER. You can also email us at kwersportstalk@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, hear your opinions on what's going on. Right now, I don't know, guys. What do you guys want to talk about? I mean,
let's talk a little bit about the draft.
Okay.
There aren't too many news stories, but something that came out that was pretty interesting, and I want to bring that to a more broader take on this. But B.J. Raji, he's the consensus number one defensive tackle. This guy will get picked in the top 10 picks as defensive tackle from Boston College, All-American, senior. There's been some reports that from the combine, he failed his drug test. Now, this is a huge deal when you look at NFL scouts. You look at NFL scouts and executives, they always look for these red flags and character issues. And when you see these red flags of players, it may be an indication for how they're going to be. Do they take this game seriously? This is their profession. They'll be doing this 24/7. And if you get caught, you know, it was the marijuana. That was the report. And no one's really confirmed or denied this. But when you hear something like that for a player of his stature, a guy who's going to get picked so high where there's so much money involved, you know, how do you think that these type of stories get out, first of all? And second of all, you know, would you draft a kid like this with one of your high picks if this is a true test?
Yeah, I honestly don't understand how the testing goes on or who actually did the testing or whatever. But, I mean, I honestly think that as a scouting staff for an NFL team, you kind of have to look at all the previous histories of what happened, what kind of stories like this occurred in the past, and kind of compare them to the careers that those players tended to have. And also, you kind of just have to make a judgment call from, you know, everyone does interviews with all these players. You have to determine whether this player showed any red flags in those interviews. You know, like you're talking about the red flag. I mean, any indication that player kind of had some problems before, I feel like this would kind of just be another one on that list. And that would be like, oh, okay, it'll kind of confirm what you were seeing before. So I don't know. I feel like you can't really base it just on this. You kind of have to put that along with all the other aggregate information.
Well, I got a question for you, Dave. When he's talking about red flags of players, how much do these teams actually really care?
I would say for something like that,
I mean, he smoked a little pot, you know?
I feel like people do care about things. Okay, you know what? There's a story that you know, this came out, but people were basically saying that he would not, his draft stats would not be affected
right,
because he's so good and, you know, he's the top of his group.
Indeed.
I would still, if it were me, this is just sort of an indication of how serious he might be about the NFL. I would ideally not want them to be drinking or doing anything.
Right.
You know, if I'm giving them millions of dollars.
Always. I mean, if you talk about a team like the Cleveland Browns right now, really trying to clean up their act, really trying to get new players in here, taking care of things, would, if they were interested in the player such as him, would they maybe now not be as interested?
Well, maybe. Yeah, with Eric Mangini, the mentality is a little different.
But. Well, we got Jeff Lesser on the phone. Jeff, can you hear us? Jeff? Hello? Jeff, can you hear me? Yeah, it looks like the phones still aren't working. go ahead. Yeah.
So Eric Mangini, what's he trying to do to the Cleveland Browns?
Mangini, yes, I mean, you've looked at his transactions so far, and he's cut a lot of guys who, they were guys who were brought in by Cornell, and they did not meet up to their expectations. So Kevin Schaefer's one that comes to mind, and then Joe Jurevicius, hometown favorite.
Right, I mean, I like Joe Jurevicius.
Yeah, a guy who played for Lake Catholic and Mentor, I believe.
Indeed.
Mentor, Ohio. Joe Jurevicius, hometown guy, but he came, he got hurt, and he didn't really, you know, he didn't perform up to the expectations. So they got rid of him, got rid of Kevin Schaefer, who was one of our tackles. And he's bringing in these guys who played for the Jets that I would call
the Jet rejects.
I would call them retreads. Yeah, the guys that really didn't, they performed well enough for a little bit, but then they got cut. There's a reason why they didn't get re-signed. Guys like Eric Barton, formerly pretty good linebacker for Oakland Raiders. Now he's okay.
I mean, to take this off the eyes of the Cleveland Browns and more into a whole NFL perspective, why do general managers like Mangini make these kind of signings? What do they feel they can do with something that's proven not an A-plus product? And why does he feel that he can win? What is he trying to build for the Cleveland Browns?
I think he wants the no-nonsense type of mentality. So George Kokinas is our general manager. Mangini's the coach, but Mangini orchestrates.
They're working together.
Yeah, he orchestrates a lot of what they're doing right now. And you know, because he pretty much picked the general manager.
Indeed.
Handpicked him. But I think that he's coming from the Belichick tree where they really don't accept, they don't tolerate any of this extra stuff. Okay. They would be less inclined to get a guy who did marijuana. But then at the same regard, once you get to a certain talent level, you get that guy. Belichick worked with Randy Moss.
He did. And
he made him a pro, all pro. He gave him the best season a wide receiver's ever had.
Indeed.
So, you know, once you get to a certain point, B.J. Raji is really a talented guy. You know, you look at a guy like Matt Stafford. Now, he's got a pretty clean slate on him, so I'm not trying to damage his image. But when you have guys of that caliber, they can almost do no wrong. I guess. I should say it like
it's
that.
Hard. And I like to see the teams with great character and great people and who stay out of trouble win, but it just doesn't work like that sometimes. Like Albert Bell, star player, but God, what a scrub. It's stuff like that. It just makes me upset in sports sometimes.
I mean, hey, Marshawn Lynch just getting arrested for the Bills.
Oh, my gosh.
Now he's suspended for the first three games of the season. I mean, great talent, you know, good running back.
Why do people do this? Do you guys both were athletes in high school, yeah?
And he's still an athlete. He plays WashU football, defensive end.
Right, and you guys have both been college athletes. Why is there so much trouble in athletics?
I think athletics is just a microcosm of society. I mean, these are athletes. The only difference between athletes and regular people are the fact that they might work a little harder, put in a little more time in their craft. But, I mean, they're normal people. I would attribute it to upbringing, maybe just some of the people that you surround yourself with, some of the choices that you make. I mean, I could be just like Marshawn Lynch, you know, if I was raised a different way or was surrounded by a different group of people. You know, I think that's really just it. They're just normal people that happen to make bad decisions sometimes. It's easy to think that if you're making millions of dollars, then you can just change who you are. But I don't think it works like that. I don't think any amount of money will really change, you know, the person.
And you look at a lot of these players, and, you know, while some, I'd say, you know, decent amount come from good upbringings, you know, dual parent households, you look at, there's a significant percentage that, you know, come from single mother households. You hear a lot of these stories from players from rough neighborhoods, and that does, you know, it doesn't mean that because you're from a rough neighborhood, you're going to commit crimes or something, but sometimes the upbringing, the people that you're around, these people that you were with when you were down, you know, you make a lot of money, you want to bring these people with you, and sometimes that can create problems for you.
Yeah.
So, you just see that it is, you're right, it's a microcosm of society. You know, Marshawn Lynch was from, I believe Marshawn Lynch was from a pretty bad area of Oakland. He went to Cal Berkeley for college, and, you know, it's just a result of just sort of where he's coming from. And then you could argue that the athletes throughout, you know, these big-time athletes, there's only a small percentage of them that actually go to school to learn.
Right.
And when you have a different mentality, when it's kind of like it's your job in college, you would be less inclined to want to learn more. But I don't know if I agree with that too much. It's different at WashU, obviously. I mean,
you guys aren't here to make it to the pros?
Some people think we are. I don't.
I'm just kidding with you guys.
If you look at the team GPA of WashU, I mean, it's better than the average GPA. The team GPA, the football team GPA. It's better than the average, you know, student GPA.
Yeah.
So, and it's much different. So much different for school, a D3 school, than it would be at major big state school.
But let's not get it confused. Yeah. I mean, okay, so smoking marijuana is wrong, but I mean, how many people do that? I don't even know if I consider that like does that mean he's a bad person? I think that just means that he chooses to do, drugs. I don't know if I can attribute that to like bad character or anything. Because especially since so many players in the NFL and NBA players and people that everyone looks up to do the same thing. I mean,
so a buddy of mine and me, we were watching the Nuggets game one time, and we were trying to figure out what percentage of those players
of the Nuggets players
smoke marijuana.
Well, first of all, it doesn't help that they live in Colorado. I know from experience. Yeah. I mean, that's accepted there. But, man, they are scrubby.
We were thinking about, like, 80%. Because there's a guy like Chris Anderson who got one of the longest suspensions I've ever seen. It was, like, a 2-year suspension from the NBA for cocaine or methamphetamine. And this is something it's an activity, especially marijuana, it's an activity that it's not legal, but it's accepted. It's something that happens. So, okay, I'll backtrack a little bit.
And even stuff that isn't accepted. I mean, you look at what happened to Charles Barkley with the prostitute. I mean, yeah, it's wrong
and
that
the DUI.
Yeah, I mean, it's wrong that he was doing that, but I still look up to the guy. You know what I mean? I don't know if I can judge him off of one failed drug test. That's all I'm saying. And if I'm a general manager, like I said, I kind of look at the aggregate and kind of look at the whole portfolio of work that he's done as far as his character stuff and his play on the field. And see how this failed drug test measures up to the rest of the picture.
Now, I want to ask you guys about the Wonder League score or the test. Now, Tim, yes, took it for one of his.
I have taken it. I've taken it twice. They would not let me know what I got, but I guarantee you, I got over 30 both times.
Okay. Yeah, and that Tim took it for one of his interviews, job interviews. Now, WonderLink is basically the test they administer at the NFL Combine. So the lowest score you can get is a 1. The highest score you can get is 50, and you get 12 minutes to take it.
Yep.
And the average score for just like an average, the average human being score is about 21. And for football players, it's about 20.
All right.
And even by positions, there's like a drastic difference for positions. So quarterbacks. I believe quarterbacks and like
offensive linemen are going to be the highest.
Have the highest,
absolutely.
They're at about like 27. They average about 27. Matt Stafford, the quarterback for Georgia, is going to get picked probably in the top 5. He got a 39.
That's impressive.
The lowest ones are generally
wide receivers. Oh boy,
running backs.
Linebackers are probably going to be pretty low as well.
Linebackers are pretty low and
the flashy positions.
Yeah, corners aren't.
It's not really even flat. It's like flashy, but if you play the sport, you know that wide receiver, running back, linebacker, it kind of takes the least cognition.
Yeah, it really does. And just from experience from playing running back at WashU especially, all I had to know was really like one number. They'd have all this. Know like a sample?
Well, in high school, it would be I-right 27, Z-motion 27 power on the quick. So the offensive lineman has to they have to know their blocking assignment, the blocking assignments of the two people next to them. Then they have to know where the running back's going to go and what they're trying to do. They got to know the snap count. What's the running back need to know? He needs to
know the hole that they run.
Exactly. He doesn't even really need to know the snap count. He just needs to wait for the running back the quarterback to move.
It's like, is it pass or run? Okay. Yep. And then where do I go? Right, left, or the guard, inside the guard, outside the tackle?
Yeah.
Now, for high school, I knew what everyone was doing. But in college, I didn't know any of that terminology. I just knew 24. Okay, I'm going to run an inside zone.
Yep.
45, okay, I'm going to run a left power. That was like, it was really simple. So when you look at it, it does make sense. But the WonderLink score, there have been a couple low scores. I don't know the lowest one off the top of my head. He got a 7. This is a guy who's a potential first-round pick. And then Percy Harvin, he's a wide receiver for the Florida
Gators. Great name, by the way.
Great
Percy
name.
Harvin.
Percy.
Percy.
Wide receiver for the Florida Gators, super fast guy. He got about a 13 or 12, which, the first thing you have to do, the first question, isn't it write your name?
Yeah, I mean, you write your name on and then you've got the question, let me give you a sample question. It would be something like, actually, if you've ever played Madden, the superstar mode of Madden, they give you an IQ test, and those are pretty similar to what the questions are. It'll be like, all football players jump. you know, Brian is a football player. Does Brian jump? And then you have to answer yes or no.
Oh, I jump, all right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much all the questions. Some of them are harder than others. There'll be some questions about trains and time zones and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's a very easy test.
Now, do you think that these scores, low scores, now good scores, that just means you did well on the test, and that's good for you, maybe smarter than the average bear. But
Washy bear.
Okay. The low scores, do you think that should have an effect on, you know, whether you would draft someone like that?
Depends on your scheme, and it also depends on what you're going to ask that player to do. I mean, again, we talked about running back. How much does a running back need to know? If you're going to be a Brian Westbrook type, you probably need to know a lot. But if you're going to be a Lindell White, you probably don't need to know so much. You're going to run forward, and you're going to run downhill, and you're going to keep running until someone tells you to stop running. And I think it just depends on what that coaching staff's going to ask you to do.
Because one of the examples that I always think of is Vince Young. Now, Vince Young, there are disputed reports. Basically, I think what happened is he took the test. He got about a 6 or a 7, which is awful. And I think he retook it and got about 16.
Improvement.
Yeah, it's improvement. That is
like to see people going up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, college football players have other people taking their test for them all the time, so it's not surprising.
Ooh, low.
But, yeah, Vince Young, this is a quarterback. This is a guy you're going to entrust. You know, he's picked third by the Tennessee Titans. This is a guy you're going to entrust with your franchise, basically. And he could barely answer most questions. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first of all, we'll have our public service announcement brought to you by the guest host, Brian Horsberg.
Our lives are affected every day by the innovations from the minds of African Americans. That's why we must do all we can to support minority education and the great minds of tomorrow. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. To support the UNCF, visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by the UNCF and the Ed Council.
So back to the, thank you very much for that, Brian. Back to the Vince Young.
Thanks to the UNCF, actually.
Oh, thank
they
you.
They brought it to us.
Thank you, UNCF. Now, back to Vince Young here. If it's a quarterback, I would rather, I know this is just sort of, this test that shouldn't really, it can't really, it's hard to determine intelligence related to, you know, using a test and then relating that to what you need to know with football. Because obviously, he was able to lead Texas to a national title. And his innovation, the way that, you know, his decision making was great there. So you think that this test shouldn't matter as much, but me personally, I would have a major red flag. I have a major problem if you can't do like word problems that you did in like middle school.
Yeah, I think quarterback's a little different just because the jump from college to the NFL is so dramatically high, especially for quarterbacks, because the schemes are specifically catered toward each, you know, they kind of change it each game to cater toward the offense, whereas college is a little dumbed down. And so, yeah, I think it'd be a big deal if your quarterback couldn't process information quickly, because that's really what the Wonderlic represents. Can you see the problem? Can you solve it quickly and move on to the next problem? That's generally what quarterback is, and that's why it takes a smart person to be able to do that.
Yeah, so okay, we talked about a few things that may affect the draft status, and we'll bring a little bit more to the table next week about the NFL draft as we get a little bit closer, because this is something that Jeff loves to talk about.
Now, we wouldn't want to leave him out on it, you know?
We wouldn't want to leave
him out.
We
would not be happy.
I want to talk about my Ohio State boys. And, you know, I'm in a sports management class this semester, and I want to talk a little bit about, let's segue this right now. There's a sports agent that came to our class, and he's a part of CAA, Creative Artists Agency, which is is the biggest agency in the United States of America. They represent actors such as Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts, Will Smith. In some capacity, they represent LeBron James. And they also represent football players like Peyton Manning. And really, just name any big-time entertainer, and they probably represent them.
But who are they?
Who are they? CAA?
Yeah.
CAA, I don't know much about them.
That's the point.
Yeah,
that's one does. That's what I'm trying to get at.
That's the best point. I was talking to Brian with this a little bit before. The agency, now I don't know much about an agency, and maybe I want to do this when I am a real person.
You are a very real person right now. When you are
not just a college student,
an older person.
But It was interesting to hear about the philosophy of like how they do things. They like to stay in the background. You know, they represent one of the some of the highest profile people. You know, even in music, you know, they represent like Toby Keith and you know these guys that bring so much revenue to the table. And you look at their philosophy; they stay behind the scenes. No one really knows their guys. And then you compare it to Drew Rosenhaus,
Scott Boras.
Ugh. Now I kind of just want to talk broadly about just agency and how it affects the game for you. Maybe they're in the background, they don't really matter. Or maybe, you know, when I look at Drew Rosenhaus, and we were just watching T.O. and his press conference with the Bills. This may have been from a little while ago, but Drew Rosenhaus was on his hip, like arm over his shoulder, like, hey, what's going on? You know,
that look does, what we did.
That has a negative impact on how I view the game because the stereotype of agents are they're sleazy. All they're trying to do is get the most money. Occasionally, they're trying to screw their own player and you know draw up a little contract where they get an exorbitant amount of money from their player. Now, how do you think that agents affect your experience as a sports fan?
I mean, Scott Boras makes me sick. Now, I don't know if I was a player, maybe that's the person I'd want. Because you know what? He gets results. But it makes it seem like it's all about the business and not about the game. And you've got to draw a line somewhere. And what are these guys doing to the athletes' minds? Like, they pump so much into their ego. And I really think it affects, like, first of all, I think Scott Boras just affects people's minds awfully. And I don't think his players, they might benefit financially from it. But it's not good for the game. It's not good for the fans.
Yeah,
I disagree with both of you. I think it makes the offseason extremely interesting when you got T.O. as a free agent and his the agent is pumping him up and throwing all these different team names out and throwing off the information out. I think without the agents, the offseasons would be incredibly boring.
A true businessman over there.
It really makes it interesting when you got Manny Ramirez and like, oh, who's he going to sign with? It gets old after a while, but then I think about, like, okay, what if Manny would have quietly signed with the Dodgers at the beginning of the offseason? What would we have had to talk about as far as baseball goes for that entire two-month period? I feel like the agents really do sort of, although they are money-grabbing, it can be bad in some instances. I feel like they do drum up some interest when the sport's not going on. Now, when they do step up through the sport and kind of during the season make a fuss, then I'll agree with you then. But during the offseason, I feel like that's really somewhat a source of entertainment.
Now, it was interesting to see how this guy, Jonathan Kaplan, he talked about his relationship with in general, agents' relationship with the owners. Because owners, I don't really like the owners because in certain sports, especially, I believe it's the NFL, they have a pretty stronghold on just revenue.
They do.
They can, if they want, just stop. Play after I believe the 2010 season.
Oh, we got a big union owner negotiation coming up.
Yeah, when the collective bargaining agreement is over, there's a chance that there could be a work stoppage. There would be no football, and the owners have the power because they really control revenue. They can afford to just discontinue football for like a year to fix everything.
Right, and I mean, and they will. They're stubborn enough to do it. But they say it's all for the fans, but it's hard to believe when they're going to stop work for a year, when they're going to stop playing ball on Sundays for a year that it's all about the fans, and that's just a little bothersome to me.
Yeah, and then you look at the relationship between the owners and the agents. They're really competitors because the owners, the agents are trying to get their best deal for their players.
Right.
They're representatives of the players, not of the teams. And the owners, you know, they're trying to get the best cut of their money. And
right. I mean, everyone's just trying to get the money.
Yeah. And yep. It's funny. It's like two groups of people that most people generally don't like because, you know, the owners, it just seems like they're raising ticket prices out of like the normal person. And the agents, they're, you know, raising prices of the contract. So these ticket prices are so high. But it's funny to hear about this clash between them. You know, they're working together, but not really.
Yeah, it's the upcoming CBA is going to be really tough because everyone wants more money, but there's things they're going to have to give up because this group, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Gridiron Greats. Do you know what that is, Dave?
No, I don't.
The Gridiron Greats are kind of the retired NFL players who have disabilities or health conditions from their... Football is a really tough sport on people. And it's not like baseball where you play to your 35 or 40 usually. I mean, the average age for an NFL player to retire is like in his early 30s.
Yeah, 30.
And that's if you're successful.
If you're successful.
The average age of all the people is like two or three years. Yeah, 3 years.
And these players get beat up. I mean, nerve damage, head brain damage, lots of damage. And they're just crying for more support by the NFL, by the owners. And no one's sure who's supposed to give them these medical benefits. I mean, after age 60, all Major League Baseball players get $200,000 a year for their pension. But the problem is these NFL players need it earlier, and they are crying out. And it's going to be a big chunk of money that someone's going to have to pay because it's a huge black eye for the league. But right now the question is, again, money. Should the players be paying into a fund that helps these older players? But these players don't understand that because I think they're invincible right now. Or should the owners be taking care of it? But it's just there's so many issues like that of the Gridiron Greats that are affecting this CBA, and that's why it's going to be so ugly in 2010.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. You see the let me just say this. I think that a work stoppage, it would obviously be devastating to everyone, especially the sport of NFL, especially how well they're going right now. But it might be what needs to happen. I'm kind of thinking that might – it might have to happen. And the reason is, you look at kind of how different the NFL and the Major League Baseball, they're kind of diametrically opposed as far as the ownership and the power that the owners have, as far as revenue and all that. I feel like for baseball, I feel like the players are in a very good position as far as how much money they make and kind of the leverage that they have and the percentage of revenue. Whereas the football players just doesn't seem like, unless you're like a top five rookie, it doesn't seem like you're making the kind of money that they would deserve, considering how much money the NFL makes. And I'm thinking that if they do have a strike, maybe, you know, because baseball had a strike in 1995.
Ugly.
And so, yeah, and it was ugly. But, I mean, like I said, the players are sitting pretty right now.
And the NBA had a lockout also.
Exactly.
Like 98,
exactly. So maybe it's just the NFL's turn to do that way, that so the owners can have a little bit less power.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah, but, I mean, you guys talked about how the owners have this power and they can afford to have the NFL stop for a year. I mean, I hate to say this, but the players are the ones playing. So as much as the owners want to talk about power and having power and all this stuff, the players don't play, then the owners lose every time. And so, you know, maybe this is what needs to happen in order for the power to balance out a little bit.
Okay, so we have a couple minutes left. I wanted to briefly bring up something of interest to Brian. This is the Frozen Four that's coming up.
This is the Frozen Four weekend, and as we are in the middle of the Frozen Four, you can't not bring it up. Two upstart teams played each other yesterday, Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. It's not Florida like everyone thinks. And beat Bemidji State 4-1 to advance to the finals, and they're taking on rival powerhouse Boston University. They topped Vermont 5-4 in the other semifinal. And if you guys, anyone in the D.C. area listening, I mean, if you can make it out to the game tomorrow, it's just a fun event. Fun. College hockey, the Frozen Four, it's what it's all about.
Unfortunately, Denver is not in the Frozen Four.
We were beat by Miami, who made it. So, you know, yeah, that tried to maybe validate us a little bit, but I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But last minute, go.
Hey, it's baseball season. Went to my first game of the year on Wednesday. Watched the Cardinals get smacked by the Pirates. I honestly just love being at the stadium. It doesn't really matter how close I am. I was all the way in the upper deck, and it was still nice to just watch the game and be there. I really like the atmosphere. So
it's something like Augusta and opening day baseball.
It really is.
Boy,
it really is. So
beautiful.
I'd encourage you to jump on eBay and go get some tickets and meet me down at the stadium. I'll be going. Next game, we'll be going to the Mets game. I know you guys are going tonight to see the Cardinals Astros. So.
Hopefully, the weather cooperates.
I'm looking out the KWAR window here. It still looks a little gloomy, but hopefully, yeah, we can pull out a little sun for the game tonight.
Yeah, well, the Cardinals are a fun team to watch. Of course, we all probably prefer American League baseball, but whatever, you know, it's cool. Know.
I mean, growing, I've been in Denver for a couple years now. These double switches are growing on me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a whole other management style that I never learned. Growing up with the DH, I have no clue what's going on out there.
It's pretty fun. It is pretty fun. I admit that.
See the pitchers try to swing a bat. I mean, I would love to see CC Sabathia batted.
He's a pretty good hitter.
I know, and he got to hit for a couple weeks in Milwaukee, but back in the American League.
Speaking of pitchers hitting the ball, apparently Randy Johnson gave up his first home run to a pitcher in his career at age 45. He gave up to a guy.
Randy Johnson's still pitching?
He's still pitching.
Oh, my
gosh. For the San Francisco Giants. He gave up his first home run to a pitcher, so I thought that was a pretty interesting stat.
Maybe it's time to retire.
Maybe he'll pitch till he's 90.
Hey, maybe.
Hey, well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you to my guest host, Brian Horsberg.
This hey, Tim, Jeff, time. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a fun time right around opening day, and sorry Jeff couldn't be with us today, but hey, shout out to him because I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, but appreciate everyone for listening. Listen to us on our podcast at kwordsportstalk.podomatic.com.
Podomatic.
Or you can subscribe to us on the iTunes store. Just search KWord Sports Talk in the search bar on iTunes.
And that is free.
It's free.
It's always fun having you guys listen. Always fun talking in the studio. Appreciate everyone. And we'll be talking some sports next week.
All right. See ya.
Later.